Welcome to the Nerd Party.
To Aggressive Negotiations. I am so excited to be at the podcast that's just slightly off kilter and just a little bit different when it comes to all things Star Wars. And of course, I can't be here without my illustrious master host friend, John Mills.
Hello, Matthew Rushing. How are you doing today?
You know, I've got to say, John, I'm doing great. We don't really talk about this on the show, but I got to say, the weather here is gorgeous, so it's spring. But two, I got a question for you.
A question for me? What question is that, Matt?
Did you know there's a new Star Wars movie out on home release?
Oh, I'd heard something about that in the month of April, they were going to roll out, I believe it was the home video version of The Force Awakens. They were going to put that for sale.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like I saw it before in theaters or something. I feel like they should have made a bigger deal of it.
I happened to walk into a Best Buy and a Target and a Kmart and a grocery store and down the street and saw all of these people selling The Force Awakens Blu-rays. Different editions at each place, strangely enough. Different packaging, different extras.
Well, first, I guess the main thing, so we saw it in a bunch of different ways in theaters. You know, they had it in 3D. You could see it in IMAX. I mean, there's as many different ways to see it in the theater, I think, as there are on home release. Although, in the home release, there's only one way to see it right now. And so I wanted to ask you just kind of about the transfer of the film itself and was that successful for you? I mean, because one, there's no 3D, and two, there's no IMAX scenes. It's just, you know, straight film.
I saw it in an actual IMAX theater. You're not missing anything. It was obviously done just for giggles. The stuff that they shot with the IMAX camera, it ultimately wasn't worth it. And that was IMAX 3D. And I think 3D is a pox upon the movie going universe. So far as I'm concerned, they're going to release another edition of this, I'm sure, as a ramp up for either Rogue One or Episode 8. We all know that.
I mean, Disney never does that.
Yeah, no. Oh, please. Disney, Lucasfilm. They even have multiple editions of Wedding Crashers, for Pete's sake. But
really?
Yeah, they did. They had two different releases for it. Yeah. But this is, so far as I know, J.J. Abrams' preferred, aspect ratio and presentation format is, you know, that this specific way of showing it. He is reputedly not a big fan of aspect ratio changes, so he wasn't wholeheartedly behind IMAX. And I know that
it shows, because there's only one scene in IMAX in the film.
Yes, and it was very frustrating because of the upcharge that I had to pay. I did see it on an actual IMAX screen, and it was a great scene to see in IMAX, but it was not worth the upcharge.
But I just went and saw the Jungle Book and saw it on a large format screen, and they must have filmed that entire movie in IMAX because it filled up the entire screen. I mean, from start to finish, and that was pretty awesome. So
just as a quick point of clarification, is that the proprietary IMAX or the actual, like, went to an Air and Space Museum IMAX type screen that you saw it on?
It is a large format screen that is not IMAX,
okay,
but it has the same dimensions as an IMAX screen.
Right.
And therefore, you know, if the film was filmed in that format, they are able to show it in the right aspect ratio, as which would make Mike Schindler very happy. but it was interesting to actually see a film in that entire format, instead of just doing that thing which so many films do, which is, you know, they film a few scenes in IMAX, and then for Star Wars here, they filmed one.
Yeah, well, at the very least, this is a step forward for J.J. Abrams, because Into Darkness, they still masked the top and bottom of the screen when they, because I saw that at an Air and Space Museum IMAX screen as well, like the big six-story screen or however tall it is. and they still masked the top and the bottom when they switched aspect ratios, which was infuriating to
me. So
at least this, it was a step forward for the lad because he actually used the entire screen that I could
see.
Well,
and what's interesting, just completely off topic, but when they re-released Into Darkness and Star Trek, the films together, in a compendium where it had all of the extras, because they had done that thing where you could get certain extras on different places, especially with the Into Darkness film, they actually... In the home release, they switch aspect ratios when it goes to
interesting
IMAX, which I was hoping they were going to do with The Force Awakens because it's easy to do. It's not difficult. I was kind of pissed that they didn't because it just means that they're just going to obviously do another release and say, oh, this one is where we switch to IMAX. You know, like they're going to make a big deal of it and... They're going to charge you an extra $30 for the film just for that and maybe, you know, three or four new extras if you're lucky.
I see what you're saying with that, but what I would counter, and we've referenced him earlier in the conversation already, but Mike Schindler has rubbed off on me because I do know that the actual preference on the part of Abrams is not to change the aspect ratio. So I feel like with this, at the very least, regardless of what you think of the movie overall, you're seeing it the way Abrams would want you to see it in the end. And for me, that's more important than what the studio forced him to do with 3D or forced him to do with shooting an IMAX scene. Now, as part of the extras, I would have preferred them to do, I think that they did this with the first release of The Dark Knight, where they had the IMAX scenes extra, right? They showed the first edition of that I owned, it showed it in, you know, one aspect ratio through the whole thing, but then you could go to the extras and see what it looked like in the IMAX aspect ratio. So it was separate from the film, but you still had it. That is definitely something where I think they should have done it here so that people could have at least gotten a feel for how the aspect ratio played into the Falcon chase through the desert of Jakku. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think that would have been.
No, I completely agree
totally
with you. That should at least be there.
Right.
You know, I personally also like in The Dark Knight when we do switch aspect ratios as well, because those scenes are so kinetic in that format. And it really actually enhances those scenes because they are just so big. It makes them feel even bigger.
Yeah.
And, you know, I felt like in that release, I didn't really notice that, honestly, the screen changed. It immersed me more within those massive set pieces that Nolan had created. But, you know, here, it's not a huge deal because, again, it's only one scene.
Yeah.
And it doesn't ruin the scene. It doesn't really... all it did was make that one scene in an IMAX screen in IMAX 3D just a little bit bigger and pop a little bit more. But other than that, you like you said, you're not really missing anything.
No.
So on a whole, I think that the transfer of the film is very successful. Obviously, it looks fantastic. I don't think there's anything wrong with the color palette at home or anything like that.
Oh, no.
It looks, you know, depending on your TV, it could probably look better than it did in the theater just because,
you know,
technology at home today is just ridiculous.
It's funny you say that because the thing that I found was when I watched it on the TV screen that we have, you know, we sat down as a family. It's like, okay, it's out. Let's watch it. And it looked great. It looked fantastic. It really did. It looked wonderful. The color balance is great. The picture was crisp. All of those things. And then when I took the digital download and I started going through it, you know, just, you know, piecemeal scenes here and there on the iPad, that was... Like, it was so funny because the experience was completely different. Like, for me, I don't know whether it's just that Blu-ray. I mean, I know that there are people who are, I'm more of a fan of the digital downloads now because I just hate having stuff on shelves. But this is really, for me, one of those things where if you want to see a difference between a digital download, especially presentation on an iPad screen versus like an actual proper, you know, flat screen sort of setup, Blu-ray really shines if you look at sort of the corner details like the saber effects and when BB-8 is moving around CG. I could really tell a difference depending on which format I was watching in, whether it was my digital download or whether it was the disc itself. So like, this is one of those ones where I would say, if you're on the fence, I personally would strongly suggest that you just go ahead. You're going to get the digital download with the Blu-ray anyway. Buy the Blu-ray because you're going to get the best picture quality there.
Well, my thought too is I'm really interested to see, you know, my wife and I have been talking back and forth. We don't know when it'll happen, but I'm interested to see what things start to look like when we buy a new TV. And you know, everything's 4K now, TV wise. And so I'm really interested to see what these things start to look like on that.
Right.
Another thing, though, John, that I was really interested in, obviously, as we're recording this, recently, JJ has come out and started talking about the film and talking about some of the difficulties of making this film, you know, and things like that. And you would expect to see that reflected on the special features, wouldn't you?
I would. Yeah, let's just get to it. The documentary that everybody was dying to see, Secrets of the Force Awakens.
Raving about on Twitter. I mean, yes. Literal. I mean, I've seen people talking about how they cried at it. Okay, cried.
I haven't seen that, thankfully, because I doubt I would have been able to bite my tongue or my digital thumb. I don't know, but okay. This is where I think being a longtime Star Wars and in specific Lucasfilm fan hampers us. And this, you know, is. If you look at episode one, a movie that got maligned, torn apart, that Lucas has, you know, people still won't leave him alone about it. And he constantly has to be like, well, you know, that's the movie I wanted to make. I'm sorry you didn't like it sort of thing. Like that documentary on that was so exhaustive and so in-depth. People still talk about it. It was like a, it was like Hearts of Darkness, a filmmaker's apocalypse. Right. It was everything laid out, all the good, all the bad, what trial moments there were. And if you really liked Phantom Menace, if you didn't like Phantom Menace, it didn't matter. You wound up watching that documentary going, wow, look at everything that went into this and the challenges that they had and the decisions that they made that produced the film that they had. Whereas, and I'll let you have the line because you say it best. This documentary falls flat, especially in those standards.
It does. And honestly, I would say that this documentary is propaganda for look how awesome we are that we gave you back Star Wars the way you think of Star Wars, at least when you watch episodes 4 and 5. Maybe 6, but 4 and 5. And it felt like, to me, them celebrating just how great they all are for not paying attention to the prequels.
Well,
and thumbing their nose at the prequels instead of what we've been getting online recently in a great conversation that Chris Rock did with JJ, where he got them talking openly about how difficult it was making this film, how hard it was to try and recapture that, and how JJ admits, look, I did. I just copped things from episode 4 because we wanted that feeling. We wanted to bring you back. And the best way I felt like to do that was to take story beats from episode 4 and put them here. I don't have a problem with that. I just appreciate the honesty.
Well, he had copped to it before. I think he's going to continue to take something of a beating for it. I still maintain that if Starkiller Base had not been a planet-destroying weapon, had just been a base that they would have had to get to for some other reason than to stop the planet destroyer from blowing up the rebel base, like, I don't think that people would have harped on the quote-unquote repetitive nature of it so much, especially because the characters that they created that were at the core of the story were original enough to have it be like, oh, this is an echo, not a copy. I think that Starkiller Base is really what allows people the lever by which to criticize it for being too much like, you know, what we call now A New Hope. Like, you know, like I'm not like being an Abrams apologist. You know that I'm not. I'm saying it just in terms of That's the one element. And that's the thing is we all know that, and he admits, I think the more important thing is that he admitted that they had to redo certain things when Harrison Ford got injured. They don't even allude to Harrison Ford getting injured on the documentary.
No, they didn't, which was weird.
Right. If you didn't know that coming into it, you don't know it at all.
Right, exactly. And that's a huge part of this film, because what I loved about his conversation, and we're not even talking about the special features anymore because they're not worth talking about at this point because they're not really giving us an actual look at the film. Mm-hmm. The whole thing with Ford getting injured allowed Abrams to really work on something that was bothering him in the movie, which was the Ray and Finn dynamic was not there, he says. He says it was flat. And he said that time gave me the opportunity to go back, rewrite the script so it fit these characters better, and we got what we got on screen, which can you imagine if that had not worked?
It would have been a disaster.
If that had been what they had had. It would have been, it would have been an unmitigated disaster, because without Ray and Finn popping on screen, there's nothing. I mean, you would just get angry fanboys being like, oh, Rey is just another Luke Skywalker and Han's just standing in for Obi-Wan. I mean, you really would start to get the people breaking down the film and giving you all the beat by beats where it does match A New Hope. Instead of those characters working, make it feel fresh, even if it's not fresh. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I think we need to be, I mean, for me, and it's awkward to be put in sort of the position of like defending. Like I think that discussions about the movie will be powered by parsing out Abrams's replies to different questions, you know, for all time, because Abrams will say something and we'll all, you know, start breaking it down. But in terms of the Finn and Rey relationship, it is, if that had not worked, the whole movie is the disaster, regardless of anything else. Like, it just would have fallen flat. It wouldn't be a $2 billion box office juggernaut. It would have been a complete flop by just about any standard.
Right.
And I think that even more intriguing for me, because I think that they never allude to this directly. He hasn't said this directly, but if they took a time to look back at things, probably Ford hurting himself or being hurt, however you want to phrase it. I think that is what gave them the opportunity to bring Poe back, because that was the one thing they just sort of like mentioned in passing, was Poe was dead on Jakku. He was done. And then Oscar Isaac was like, really? I don't want to die early in the movie. And then Abrams apparently went back and he was like, figured out how to bring you back. Well, what did you do? Did Snap Wexley suddenly get demoted? Right? Did Greg Grunberg show up at set one day and you were like, well, Greg, I know I promised you were going to be black leader, but it's Oscar now. Sorry. You know, like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
I do completely.
And that's one of the things I really wish they would have hit on, was like, all of these things obviously impacted the way that the movie unfolded. And that's what these documentaries should do. Like you said, this is it feels like propaganda at points where they're self-congratulatory. I want more. And the fact that Laurent Bouzereau, who is responsible for so much wonderful archival stuff from Lucasfilm through time, the fact that he's the one that directed this, is it's very disappointing to me. Very disappointing.
Okay, the problem here that I see is this, John, is that we've had the Lord of the Rings, and the appendices for the extended versions of Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit films is outstanding. I mean, and so honest. Now, I know you're not a huge fan of the Hobbit films, but those extended versions have 9-hour appendices. Exhaustive. And what's so great about them is that it gives Peter Jackson an opportunity to be really honest about some things, and he doesn't shy away from that honesty in some of those documentaries about how hard that process was for him, because he did not have the prep time, you know, and he admits how they were a lot of times having to make certain things up on the fly, and where it works and maybe where it didn't, and where the extended versions gave him the opportunity to change things. What I'm saying is that we've had amazing documentaries about films now. You mentioned episode one.
Yep.
We've had the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit series. This just feels like all the things I've already seen about the film, too. There's nothing really new here. That's the other frustrating thing. It's like, I already knew all this stuff because it's already been out online somewhere. There's absolutely nothing here that, like, blows my mind or, like, oh, gosh, they had to... The things that blew my mind were what JJ's saying now and the stuff I got at Target with the Target release.
Right, but, you know, to even speak to that point is the table read. They teased that the table read was going to be on the extras. The first table read when the cast got together and read the script for the first time, and it's 4 minutes. And they don't even just show people doing the table read. It's, oh, the table read was so great. I really enjoyed that. And then they show a snippet of somebody saying,
we had Mark Hamill read it because he didn't have anything else to do.
Right, yeah. But, that, you know, it's that thing where it's like, seeing that table read, I almost have the feeling now, because of what they have alluded to and what he said after the fact, that that table read, they're almost afraid to release the whole thing because it would show all of the spots where the script got changed, right? Was there an, there, like, how interesting would it be to see that first table read and then say there was an element of contention among fans or detractors of the movie where you watch the table read and you go, oh gosh, he added that later? Or, oh, why did they keep that in when obviously, you know what I'm saying? Like, it would have given a real.
Mm-hmm. No, completely understand.
And yeah, I mean, I guess that's, you know, I know that it's nerdy on its whole own level to sort of, go after the special features. But when you're talking about something high profile like this, the thing that drives me nuts, and it's not just about The Force Awakens. This is a much larger topic. But these Blu-ray combo packs, like, I went to Target, I got the Blu-ray, and it was the Blu-ray, it's a Blu-ray plus DVD plus digital download. I don't want the DVD. You're literally just creating landfill waste at this point. Why are you wasting my time? And by the way, you had three disc sleeves. Why isn't my third disc its whole own 2.5 hour documentary? I mean, look at the documentary we got. You know, I know this will sound silly, you know, to keep bringing up past Lucasfilm documentaries, but that documentary that we got from the 2004 DVD set, which they didn't include in the Blu-ray set.
Oh, Empire of Dreams? Right. Oh, God, that thing was incredible.
It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. And
it's like a condensed version of Rensselaer's making of books. That's really what that documentary feels like. It just feels like a condensed version of all three of those.
Yes. And although can't rave about those three books enough, but I feel like that's the thing that we're going to lose now, because people have complained about Disney extras with the Marvel movies where, like, people got the Avengers movie and had the extras and they were like, who cares? And that's the whole reason that somebody like me, I typically don't even care about the extras anymore, because I don't know when I'm going to get something worthwhile. And this to me just proves, you know, maybe with episode, like, if this is what I have to expect for the extras, I mean, maybe I will go to Target, because like you said, the Target specific extras are fantastic, but
well, I want to mention one thing, because I do want to praise one place where the film extras were really honest. And there is a section about JJ talking about and Carrie talking about being back. Mm. And, you know, Carrie had not worked in a while and she was having a rough time for the first few days. And her and JJ worked together and they talked about how their relationship grew, and he really was just very encouraging and very loving towards her and gave her the freedom to mess up and try again, you know. And I thought that was great, because I think that honesty of seeing, you know, we all kind of, I think in some ways, kind of worried how Carrie might be, but it comes across on screen, I think, that she found her groove, you know, how Carrie got her groove back. And she really became Leia again in this film, and I felt like she did a fantastic job in the scenes that she had for the most part. So that honesty, I was like, I would love to see that, because, I know background information about the film from people who worked on it about, you know, some troubles they had with rewriting different characters or trying to make things work. And it's like we're only starting to get that now. as JJ's talking honestly about the film. And what I didn't want was a Disney pat on the back to themselves, look how great we are. I wanted the honest story about how hard it is to bring Star Wars back. And to me, I think the hard part is, and they would never say this, but they don't have George. And, you know, I think
okay,
when you could go to one person and ask, is this how we want it to be done? And George would either say yes or no. It was probably a lot easier than when you have like yeah. 5 or 10 people now. Okay, what do we do?
Okay, the one thing I will say, and this is coming from somebody who has the same deep well of love and respect for George Lucas as an artist at a minimum and as a person on the whole, is that by his own admission, I remember specifically an interview where they said, you know, did you want to be more involved? And he actually said in the interview, I'm glad I wasn't because I would have tried to take over and that wouldn't have been fair to everybody. He goes, I would have wanted to run everything and everybody would have hated it and I would have been miserable and they would have been miserable. And so I backed away and I didn't want anything to do with it. And he's even freely admitted that, like, he goes back, you know, one morning he'd wake up and he was glad that he was free of Star Wars. And then on another morning he'd wake up and he'd be like, I wish I had it back. And I think that the one thing I'll give them plenty of credit for is that whenever somebody in an interview mentions George Lucas, it is with a deep and abiding respectful tone. There's nobody in there that says, we're glad that Lucas wasn't working on this. Everybody says, we're here playing around where George Lucas set everything up and George Lucas did everything to get us to this point. Like, I think that they were appropriately acknowledging all of the stuff that Lucas had done up to that point. I would be very interested to see Lucas and Abrams sit down. I think that would have been a great extra to have Lucas and Abrams sit down and talk about, basically have like Lucas say, I would have done this. And why did you do this differently? Why did you choose that instead of what I would have done here?
Right. And I definitely don't mean, I like that they start off the documentary that they do the cinematic journey of, you know, it starts off with that George interview that they did.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, everybody's very respectful. I think my point was, is just that I think you can see if you're reading between the lines and you're hearing the things that JJ's talked about now, that there is a difficulty of transitioning from a universe that's been run by one man
mm-hmm.
to a universe that's now run by committee. I don't have time to discuss this in a committee. I am not a committee. Well, now Star Wars is a committee.
Well,
you know, and so it's a different process. And,
sure.
And I feel like that if we had gotten more of the honesty that we're getting from JJ now, you would kind of see that. And I think that's a really interesting thing. Just as a fan of somebody, I love learning about how movies are made and the behind the scenes. I think what we're both kind of complaining about is that we really didn't get to see how this movie was made for real.
Right.
It was more of the whitewashed tomb of, hey, it was great. We had a great time making it.
Yeah,
and it was
shot
fantastic.
On film, it's, practical sets, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
It sounded like a Donald Trump thing. It was huge. It was great. It was big. We loved it. It was perfect. We had a great time doing it. We're so glad you got to see the film. It was great. Did I mention it was great? It's going to be great. It was great. Everybody loved it. That's kind of what the special features sounded like, you know, because, yeah, they did the whole thing about, you know, crafting all of these creatures, which that's fun. I love seeing that. I, you know, I want to see more about how they created those characters that aren't digital, but they've grown that technology. I mean, the crafting creatures extra was fantastic.
Yeah.
I just wish I had had more of that stuff. And the other thing is this too. Instead of breaking all of these special features up, you know, so you have the hour-long cinematic, you know, journey, the table read, crafting creatures, building BB-8, all of that stuff should just have been in one documentary
yep.
called The Cinematic Journey
yep.
because you could have edited that all together and it would have felt a little bit more cohesive. Sure. I still would have wanted more depth to each part, but mm-hmm. it still, I think, would have been better than breaking it up into all these small documentaries. Instead of that, just say, we have, you know, a hour and a half documentary about making the film.
Mm-hmm.
It still wouldn't have been good enough for me because of what we've talked about, but it would have been better.
Agreed. So, okay. So we're not talking about the film, but just I think the final key question is on everybody's used to a 5-star scale. So let's switch it up to an A through F scale. What grade do you give the extras for the Force Awakens home release?
I got to give them a C-. I feel like now that is without the Target extras.
That's an important
The Target extras I'm going to rate by themselves, and I'm going to say that those are B+, because the mm-hmm. conversation between Daisy Ridley and John Boyega I thought was really good, because they just kind of, I think, did the thing that we were looking for. It was just those two sitting in a room talking about their experience. They're both new to Star Wars. They're really both new to acting, and I think I just like watching them, and it felt more honest. And then the Inside the Armory look was really cool about how they created the new weapons and the new technologies they're using. I mean, they're using amazing 3D printers, and where they got some of their inspirations for the new weapons that we see. Excellent. You know, so why that just wasn't part of the main release anyway, I don't know, but some of the main information that we get and got leaked out online was actually from that scavenger and the stormtrooper conversation with Daisy Ridley. Yeah. So those Target release, B+, regular release, C-. What about you, John?
You know, I'm going to be slightly, ever so slightly more kind to the overall stuff, the non-Target stuff, and give it a C. They actually spent time talking to John Williams specifically about his thought process with it. And it's always fascinating to listen to somebody who is easily as great a composer as Beethoven in my book.
Well, and I feel like that was one of the extras that was so great because, you know, I wish they would have been able to have somebody there to probe John more and be like, oh, I noticed that you used some of the themes from some of the prequels. What was your thought process? You know, but nobody was going to do that. So.
Right. But I mean, just the tapestry that he wove and knowing that the musical voice was a constant was really nice. And I agree,
you know,
the Target stuff. Yeah. B+. That sounds fair. So, yeah, there you go. So I guess Force Awakens doesn't really justify a home edition purchase before the next version that's going to come out, you know, based on the I'm not saying it doesn't. I'm just saying, like, if you're going to go simply by the extras, like to have you decide between the cheaper and the more expensive version, I think we're both saying, yeah, go with the cheaper version for now because you're going to get more of
that
this later.
Or go with the Target version because I felt like I actually liked what they added. Now, you can only watch that on the Disney Movies Anywhere app or online through that website. But, you know, sitting there for the extra 20 minutes for me was completely worth it.
You know what? I will say this, too. This was something that just annoyed the living bejeebers out of me was the fact that, and I know the people I caught a little gumption for this because, oh, well, you know, everybody has download codes anyway, but the simple fact that the only way I could get the Target extras that I paid extra for was not to use the physical disc I had just purchased, but I had to go through and sign up for something and get there and get to the thing. And it had to be through a specific service. It's just sort of like, you know, guys, come on. Like, if I'm going to pay for the extra thing, just put it on a spare disc that you package with it or something, you know, take away the DVD disc and then just give me that on the third disc for Pete's sake.
Yep. Yeah, I completely agree. And you know, I think what we're saying is that we love Star Wars and we love to see the behind the scenes of Star Wars. And we have seen some great documentaries over the years. Now, I could also ding the episode 2 and episode 3 Blu-ray and DVD releases that they did back in the day, because those extras weren't great. Episode 1 is the one that set the pinnacle, as did the DVD release of the original films all together when they finally put them all in DVD, and they gave us the Empire of Dreams extra DVD that was just, it just kind of blew your mind. It was like 2 hours of awesome. And if you've never seen it, go find it online. You can find it, I think, even on YouTube these days. And so we just kind of want more. And I think I'm cynical and old enough to have gotten tired of, well, we're just going to sell you another edition later on down the line that you're going to want to buy. And yes, Lucas himself has done that.
Repeatedly.
Although I do have to say that the biggest releases for me were when he released episode 1 on DVD for the first time. And then everything came out on DVD, especially the original series, the original trilogy. And those were the big releases. And then, of course, the whole set on Blu-ray. I guess we're in the land of the Disney and the Lucasfilm, and they've just compounded the problem even more so now.
Well, you know, I mean, to be honest, though, the one thing you could ding Lucasfilm for was, just one last quick point to hit about that then before we go is with the Blu-ray edition of, you know, the previous six, you know, the 9-disc set on Blu-ray, there were extras from the DVD set that they didn't include.
That's right.
And so it's like each different format. And I want to get your ruling on that, because for me, I was like, oh, well, you know what? I'm not buying the same thing over again. Like, it at least gave me the sense that I was buying something different. Does that make sense? So how does Disney proceed from this point? Do they have to bundle everything plus a little extra next time? Or should they go with the Lucasfilm approach of give us something completely different in the extras next time?
This is what I would say. I think they should do this. Don't release another edition of this. Just release every subsequent film with its special features. And then once this sequel trilogy is done, this release the massive set together that has an overarching documentary, maybe 3 parts for each film, about making the whole thing, where you go in and you create a massive 3-hour, 5-hour, 6-hour documentary. It's 2 hours each disc. So it really makes it feel like, okay, I am getting something different. And it becomes more retrospective, and it's probably going to be more open, because everybody is at the point after this is over, this first trilogy, and who knows what they're going to do next with the saga. But then it can be as honest and open as possible, because people are a little bit more removed and have the ability just to say, yeah, okay, it's this is where it should be. And this is where we had mistakes. This is where it was interesting to be working in this universe again. I think that's what you do, personally. Whether they'll do that or not, I have no idea. But it does seem like, take the Lord of the Rings edition, you know, where you did the special editions, but they actually were extended editions, 1 of the film, but 2 of the massive documentaries. So make it worth our while to go back and buy it again.
Sure. Well, I'll tell you what, Matt, this has been, I think, the authoritative discussion about the special features for The Force Awakens home release. I don't think we could have delved any deeper, really, except for saying that, at the very least, we know who's to blame for so much focus on that chess set. But outside of that, why don't you tell people where they can reach us on the internet?
Well, John, you can find the show at thenerdparty.com. You can also find us on Twitter at The Jedi Masters. And, I mean, of course, we had the definitive discussion. We are The Jedi Masters on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
For a reason.
Of course.
you can also find me just personally online on Twitter at MattRushing02. And of course, John, you can also email us at an@thenerdparty.com. We'd love to have your email thoughts on what you're thinking about, you know, about your Blu-ray edition, what edition you did get, why you got that. I would love to hear, you know, the back and forth of why people bought it in certain places. And then, of course, we're on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty, because we're going to be talking about all about this there. Personally, I'm on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me on the Trek FM network doing The Orb with Chris Jones. That's our Deep Space Nine show. It's so much fun. We love diving into what I consider to be the best show of Star Trek. You can also find me on Literary Treks with Dan, where we're talking about the books and the comics of Star Trek. We're interviewing authors. Really enjoy doing that show. And then, of course, the General Geek Show over at Trek FM is called the 602 Club. And we talk about everything from Star Wars to superheroes to Bond to, I mean, just everything. We're covering everything. So make sure you check out that show, because it's a lot of fun. And, John, we've had a lot to do over there because we cover Star Wars stuff there, and there's a special Star Wars feed as well. So there's the 602 Club and the special Star Wars 602 Club feed. You can find both of those on iTunes. So, John, that's all that I'm doing online, which is too much. But yes. I know that there's some amazing things that you're doing online that our listeners need to know about.
Oh, well, they need to know that I'm over on Twitter at Kessel Junkie. I am also on the Trek FM network, hosting for now, as of the recording of this, we're rushing to a close at, Commentary Trek Stars, which I co-host with, Mike Schindler. I do invite everybody to come through and listen to the recent retrospective we've had on the works of Justin Lin, where I became a Fast and Furious fan. And then also, ooh, I am on a podcast called Words with Nerds that I co-host with my buddy Craig. So come on over. And I think Matt and I have given you plenty of ways to reach us. So what do you think, Matt? You think it's time to close negotiations?
John, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.